everybody, and welcome back to the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, and joining me is the international man of mystery, Kyle Krause.
If I'm a man of mystery, how do you know who I am?
Well, I didn't say your name was a mystery. I just said there are mysteries, you know, like Coke or Pepsi, or
is there
what's
really
your sign, or, you know, little mysteries.
Okay. I thought you meant, like, if Coke or Pepsi was a mystery. I was confused. I was like, no, I'm pretty sure those are real things that actually exist. I don't know what you're getting at, but I understand now. You're asking,
if you really
if,
want to take
we're
this
asking,
existential view, you know, do we really know what they are? Can we really know ourselves? Can we really be sure of anything?
That's true. Are you some sort of philosopherist?
More like a falafel first.
Falafel.
I waffle and falafel, and occasionally some people think I know what I'm talking about.
Ah, yes. It's good to have that, I don't even know what it's called.
Falafafy?
Yes, that's it. That's precisely what I was thinking. No, that's not what I was thinking, but whatever. That's fine.
Otherwise, I'm just doughy and full of meat. Anyway, yes. Speaking of being on top of real factual information, Nintendo Direct just came to us recently since the unfortunate passing of Iwata-san and brought us oodles of information.
Yes, it did. Interestingly enough, we're recording this a lot later than usual, by the way. So we're on top of things. We've got like the latest news for you guys right here. This is hot right off the presses. This is the hottest Bumblecast ever. So it's going to be good.
I can just imagine sitting there screaming at this giant Gutenberg-style press, "Hey, Kyle! Let's talk about Nintendo Direct!" And then we pull a lever, and then out pops an MP3.
I like it.
Which is on the final record for some reason.
Of course. No. We can sell it to people who are really into vinyl. I could have been mean, but I avoided that. I did not want to be mean. I will avoid being mean. Too mean, anyway.
We don't have that many people who listen. We can't be mean. We're going to scare off somebody.
Right.
So of the two most exciting things for me was confirmation of new Smash Brothers content and confirmation of new Hyrule Warriors content. Never mind the new Splatoon stuff, which was really cool, and a little bit of info on the new Zelda. But there's too many things to pick.
Right, too many
directions.
We of course have to talk about the unveiling of a new character in a hit game who is amazing and awesome, and I'm really looking forward to talking about her.
You mean Lightning? I mean Cloud? I mean.
No, not that one. I'm
going to laugh hysterically if one of Cloud's alternate skin colors is basically
lightning.
With the pink hair.
It will be.
That would be. Yes, let's talk about Linkle.
Yeah, let's talk about the important reveal. Yes.
I mean, part of me, I will admit, I'm going to be a snob here. Yes. I'm a trifle disappointed that she isn't wielding the sword and shield like Link.
Yeah, I was actually looking at the concept art that she originally appeared in earlier this year, where she does have the sword and shield. And yeah, that would be cool, but I don't know. I like that she'll play differently, which is nice.
That's the big
thing. She'll be her own unique character.
Right. I mean, we've got Link, we've got Young Link, we've got Toon Link at this point. Family Link really would be, you know, running out of ideas. So it's really cool that they gave her a unique playstyle that is still reminiscent of Link. And it's cooler still that they listened to fan demand and brought her in.
Yeah. That was the biggest surprise for me of the whole show. The whole direct. I guess it's not really a show. It is a show.
I'm also excited for Tetra and King of Red Lions and Skull Kid. Those are all really awesome too.
Yeah.
But Linkle, that's one of those things that's like, they'd never do it, but wouldn't it be cool if they did? And boom! There she is.
Yeah, wouldn't it be cool if they made Rule 63 canon? If there was a Nintendo game where Rule 63 was totally canon, and then I guess Team Ninja and Nintendo were like, okay.
What's driving crazy, though, is we don't have, as far as I know, solid confirmation on how you can get the 3DS content on the Wii U version.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm concerned about. It's like, I haven't heard anything about that. I know, I thought there was something toward the beginning when the 3DS version of Hyrule Warriors was announced, which is Hyrule Warriors Legends, for those who aren't in the know. But I haven't heard anything since then that the content that they're adding to Legends will be coming to the base Wii U version.
Now, I want to say I heard somewhere that there would be some form of interactivity where your progress in regular Warriors would be somehow honored in the 3DS version.
Yeah.
Maybe it would be character unlocks, maybe it'd be weapons. Oh, that would be sweet. But
yeah.
Even if it's just a matter of if you unlock them in the 3DS version, it will be honored in the Wii U version, or if it's just a straight up pay for this content. I will pay for this content. I will buy four new characters and, you know, challenge maps and whatnot.
Oh, I'll
consider
buy
all that they gave us.
Yeah, I'll buy the DLC. I'll buy that DLC right out, straight up, if they just gave that to us as an option. But I don't know how I feel about necessarily double dipping and getting the 3DS version just to get content for the Wii U version. Because I personally, when I play a Warriors game, I want to play it on a big TV with a decently powerful system.
Yeah.
On the 3DS, that screen's a bit cramped. The screen on the Wii U gamepad even is a little bit cramped for a Warriors game, so putting that on the 3DS, I'm sure it's still fun, but I'm a little bit wary of that. I'd rather play it on a big TV.
That, and I'm really hoping that the additions and the tweaks they make on the 3DS version will become applicable to the Wii U version, because the ability to jump to other Warriors on the screen that it would normally be computer controlled, and then you take them over and you're able to rescue yourself, I think that's a brilliant addition, and I really want to be able to use that.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I'm just really excited for Linkle, though. That's my favorite part of the whole thing. I'm not even sure why. It's just cool.
I think it's fun. It's one of those things where it's like one of those whimsical things that they actually honored. And it's like, it kind of makes me feel like the old video game days where any news was bright and shiny and exciting. And here it is again. It's like, it makes me feel like a kid again.
Yeah. Yep. All right. I guess we can talk about the other character reveal. I guess.
So there's a little bit of controversy swirling around Cloud. What is your take on
I'm just
sword swinger?
I'm just pedantic and cynical and old. I'm 29. I'm old at 29. So no. Actually, I think it's kind of cool. I'm just like, I had the same reaction to Ryu. Actually, a very similar reaction. I thought it was neat, but I was like, there are characters I would have preferred from those respective series over them. So I know that they're the main poster kids, the main poster children of their respective series, Ryu and Cloud. But I don't know. There's just so many other characters they could have gone with.
True. And I can understand some of the consternation. I mean, as folks have pointed out, Cloud is pretty much the face of not only Final Fantasy, but of the moment when Sony made its very nasty break from Nintendo.
Right.
And while Smash Brothers isn't necessarily just a celebration of Nintendo franchises anymore, and it is kind of a celebration of video gaming, it is kind of like, of all the eras to pick from, that one's kind of loaded, which you can't really avoid. But on the other hand, when it comes to Final Fantasy, short of Lightning, really, who else is more iconic and indicative of the franchise?
Yeah, that's why I understand why they would go with him specifically, with Cloud specifically.
I'm pretty sure I heard just like hundreds of people scream out, Terra! At the same time. But
well, yeah.
I'm not saying Final Fantasy VI is a shortcoming in any way. I mean, Final Fantasy VI is arguably the better game. I'm not going to wade into those waters because I value my life. But, you know, Smash Brothers is a battling of the icons, and Cloud is an icon. So I don't begrudge his appearance.
No.
I'm more excited for his stage than the character.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's the same reason Ryu is in the game as well. He's the icon of the Street Fighter series, between him and Ken, for sure.
Arguably the icon of, you know,
fighting
arcade
games.
Fighters, period.
Yeah, right. So that makes perfect sense to include him. Even though I could think of other characters that I would have preferred to have personally, it makes sense for both Ryu and Cloud to be included.
So presumably, December will have will announce who the winner of the poll was.
Oh yeah.
And because they said there's going to be some kind of announcement in December, and I can't imagine what else it would be.
You mean it's not Cloud? That would have been aside my guess.
And now I'm really hoping that what we talked about earlier, that there would be six slots instead of just three, is true. Because, I don't know, having Cloud join the roster is neat. But if there's really only three slots to fill and he takes up one of them, I might be a little salty on that.
Yeah, I might just be salty too because they didn't announce Shovel Knight or Shantae. That might be my problem right now. I might just be mad. I'm not mad. I actually.
Shovel Knight comes out holiday 2015.
Shovel Knight's actually out right now.
The Amiibo, excuse me.
Oh, the Amiibo. Okay. I was going to say the physical game just came out a couple weeks ago.
Right.
I already have it, so.
So if it's coming out then and the announcement's going to be around then, maybe they're saving it all for one go? I don't know.
It would be kind of cool to see, you know, I don't know who exactly they would announce. They might have Lloyd. They might throw Lloyd from Tales of Symphonia in there, finally. And Shovel Knight and Shantae would be two that I would pick. I wonder if they'll have any more major third-party characters, though, or if Cloud's going to be the main reveal for that.
If we're going to talk third-party, the last one I'd have on my list is Banjo and Kazooie.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they were really kind of the last big hurrah for 3D platformers and adventurers. And they were rather iconic for the Nintendo. You don't really think of Xbox and think of Nuts and Bolts relatively favorably. And they would have a fantastic moveset. So, I don't know. We'll see.
I would like to see them. That's going to be really tough if that happens. But
if Cloud is in there, pretty much all bets are off.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing that Cloud represents for me. It's like this kind of changes so far the, I guess, has it been an unspoken rule where it's they have to be at least have a game on a Nintendo console?
I think that was stated by Sakurai-san when Brawl was being developed. And Sonic appeared, okay. And people started losing their minds. No, excuse me, it was when Snake appeared. That's what it was. And everybody just lost it. And it's like, well, you know, as long as they've appeared at least once on a Nintendo console, and they are kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
So
you could stretch and say that Cloud has been on a Nintendo console because he is a selectable character in Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy. But that's a really big stretch.
I'm waiting for it to be revealed that he becomes downloadable for Smash Brothers the same date that they make the original Final Fantasy VII available on the Virtual Console, just to watch the internet explode.
What would they even, if they put that on the Virtual Console, what would they categorize it under? What system? Would they say PlayStation?
I don't know.
I think it might like be a Wii original or whatever, Wii U original or whatever they're calling it, because I don't think they're calling it WiiWare anymore. But yeah, that would be a little awkward if they had PlayStation right there on the in the store as one of the as one of the system categories.
That never happened. Here's the game that should have come out for it.
oh yeah,
that's what they label the entire PlayStation library as, just the Nintendo disc drive that never happened. Retconning history for their own profit.
Oh, man. That would be hilarious. They'd never do it, but it would be hilarious. Did you actually see the news of that PlayStation, the PlayStation concept, the console, the Nintendo PlayStation thing that was found a while ago in someone's attic?
Yeah, I remember seeing some old design specs and whatnot.
That actually, someone found it. Someone found one, and it seems to be legit. They recently tested it at a trade show in Hong Kong, and apparently it's a real thing, and it actually works. It only plays Super Famicom games. The disk drive doesn't seem to actually work, so unfortunately, it seems to be a real thing.
You know what that really confirms, though?
What's that?
Somebody's dad really did work for Nintendo.
Oh, finally! Finally, someone actually has a dad that worked for Nintendo, or an uncle, or an uncle dad.
Now we're getting complicated.
Oh yeah, true. Oh man, what else was in the Nintendo Direct that got you excited?
There was let's see, all the new content that they're throwing into Splatoon is amazing.
I look good. I like the swimming pool level with the changing water levels.
That one's neat. I love the giant museum with all the rotating stuff because it feels like the kind of bizarre modern art thing that these squid people would do.
Yeah, that is that definitely fills out the world a little bit too of Splatoon. So I thought that was kind
of
neat.
As a fan of Pokemon, you know, nothing really got my attention a lot. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they are cranking out so much stuff and they're kind of diversifying a bit is kind of interesting. The whole Shadow Mewtwo and Mega Shadow Mewtwo is pretty much Dragon Ball Z now, but I'm also a sucker for power levels and transformations, so it looked neat, at least.
Adding in the wireless transfer to replace the Game Boy Link cable for the original games on the eShop, I thought that was pretty cool.
I really like that gesture. That to me speaks more than just putting them out there.
Right. I really like the way Nintendo sort of treats their games as far as updating them for new technologies and stuff like that, their re-releases.
And considering how obtuse it was once they moved off of the Game Boy and you have to change to different cables or you had to have this plug-in for your N64 controller and the fact that they went back in and they added in the Wi-Fi trading is very nice.
There was also news that they added in, or not added in. There was also news that they are releasing Mother 3 to the Wii U Virtual Console.
Really?
But exclusive to Japan.
Ah, there we go.
Yep, that's the killjoy. That's the kicker.
There we go.
Oh, Nintendo. You were on the right track with Earthbound Zero, or... what did they call it here? Was it Earthbound Zero that they called it here?
I don't know. I haven't followed the series that closely.
Of the recent release of the original NES game, Mother.
Right.
Was it Earthbound Zero? I think it was.
It sounds familiar.
I might be thinking Earthbound Zero was the fan-translated version. Earthbound Beginnings? Origins? What am I'm sounding completely... Earthbound Beginnings. That's it. Okay, Earthbound Zero is the fan-translated version.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, nobody cares.
And while I could never really get into it, it's neat that they're continuing the Mystery Dungeon series, and it was just amusing to see a little Pikachu walking around with a giant Groudon or Ho-Oh flying around beside him.
Yeah, that looked pretty cool. I guess that does have all, 720 Pokemon in it?
It's neat. It's kind of funny that they specify known Pokemon, because I think there's two or three that the hackers have found that have not been officially distributed. So, those event legendary things that have yet to appear in a movie or in some kind of distribution.
There were a couple of Pokemon free-to-play titles revealed for the 3DS as well, which, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Nintendo's kind of trying to tap into a little bit of that mobile market and, they're doing their thing. Changing with the times, which we should be applauding Nintendo for sometimes.
At the same time, you have to wonder, because they announced the Super Mario Brothers Endless Runner that they debuted when they were talking about going mobile. Is it coming out to 2017?
Really?
And while I can applaud Nintendo for wanting to make sure that they do it right and not doing some slapdash cash-in, Endless Runners are kind of a old hat gimmick nowadays. Sonic's done 3 and 2 in completely different formats, so what's taking so long there, Minty? It's not that hard. Not speaking as a programmer, but you wouldn't think it would be that difficult to run switch left, right, jump. It's I don't know, but what do I know? I'm just some old white guy.
That makes two of us. Dragon Quest 7 and 8 also got announced, as I say, as ports to the 3DS.
Yep, I understand that those are big to-dos. I think I tried Dragon Quest 7 and got real tired of it real fast, but it's like the single biggest RPG series, or right behind Final Fantasy, so what do I know?
From what I understand, this is secondhand experience, because my girlfriend is a huge Dragon Quest fan. Dragon Quest, Dragon Warrior 4 is her favorite game. However, Dragon Quest 7, from what I understand, is probably one of the worst introductions you could have to the series. It's apparently not very good. It's not great. It's very grindy and slow. Not a lot's going on for a very long time in the game. And yeah, all I remember from it was watching her go around to a bunch of different places over and over, repeatedly crossing the world, trying to find puzzle pieces over and over. And that's all you do for the first 40 hours of the game.
Delightful.
Yeah, it didn't look great. So I kind of understand what they were going for. This is, they had a lot more space to work with because this was the first PlayStation Dragon Quest game. So they had, you know, the whole CD they could use, and use it they did.
Whether you wanted them to or not.
Yes. I think it came on two CDs, actually. Dragon Quest VIII is a much, from what I understand, a much, much better game. I actually did watch her play through most of that, and it was entertaining. There's full voice acting. It's got a good story. The characters are really likable and enjoyable. There's not too many of them, so you're not saddled with trying to remember who's who. It's just fun. I think you'd like Dragon Quest VIII.
Well, I'll add it to the list of games that I don't have time to play.
Right, right. Of course. What else? What else did we get? Fire Emblem news. Fire Emblem Fates. They're coming out with pretty much the same bundles here that they are in the East, so...
Yeah, the hype for Fates is lukewarm on my end,
mm-hmm.
in part because they haven't seemed to put out a very clear idea of what the differences between the games are.
Yeah.
I've heard that it's basically Pokemon Red and Blue, and that they're the same thing. I've also heard one is more awakening styled in that it's gentler on the player, while the other version is more classic style where it's absolutely brutal and unforgiving, and just other things that have kind of trotted out. This is probably a larger topic to discuss on another time, but from what I've seen of Fates, it gets a little too fan servicey, you know?
Yeah.
There's a couple of characters where it's like, are you sure this is on the 3DS and not somebody's private computer?
Are you sure this isn't one of those Steam visual novels that I keep hearing about?
I mean, the whole building your own base and then, you know, having people raid it for small engagements is really cool.
Yeah.
And then you have the bathhouse that's accidentally co-ed and you touch people's faces until they like you and...
Well, at least it's only their faces.
I don't know. We haven't seen the whole game yet.
Well, that'll probably get changed when it gets brought over here, so... Whatever it is, it'll get changed.
Yeah, so I don't know.
They've already done some changes to, apparently, Xenoblade Chronicles X. Some news I just saw about that. We won't delve into that, but...
Yeah. I think that's the long and short of it in terms of the Nintendo Direct, at least as far as we're going to discuss this time.
Well, there's Star Fox Zero as well, if you wanted to touch on that briefly. Did that look any different from when you tried it out?
It looks prettier.
It does look good.
They're still pushing the whole, hey, look, you can aim on one screen, but control on the other. Like, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, if I was a chameleon and could divert my eyes like that, sure, that'd be grand. But as someone who can barely walk and chew gum and talk at the same time, it's, I don't know. We'll see.
I thought it was interesting. I thought it was kind of neat to see the walker mode back from Star Fox 2. They did tout it as new, but that's not really new. I mean,
yeah, I'm wondering how much... More, because 2 seems to have been chopped up and distributed throughout the Star Fox franchise.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you had the multiple characters playable with their alternate vehicle types in command. You had the get across the map and destroy the target before the home base is destroyed in command.
Yeah.
You've got the walker now, which I refuse to call walker. It is the R chicken.
All right.
Walker is boring.
I'll co-sign on that.
Thank you. You've got the R-Wing, the Landmaster, and the R-Chicken.
And the helicopter, whatever.
The Gyro-Wing, I believe?
Yeah, that's it. That, I should also mention, for those who don't know, Star Fox 2 was unreleased for the Super Nintendo. It was supposed to come out toward the end of the Super Nintendo's life cycle, but they ended up shelving it and coming out with Star Fox 64 instead. So, but
wasn't that it was just killed early in the development cycle. It was done.
Yeah, it was originally thought that it was just a beta, but then a final version, a practically near final version, was found a few years back and then got dumped as a ROM online. Yeah, it was practically done. They could have released it, but I don't know. Nintendo hates money. I can understand it. They wanted to move on to the N64, but They could have still done it.
It was just, you know, kind of neat to see all the things that were originally planned get used elsewhere, like All Range Mode, Star Wolf,
the R Chicken. Yeah.
All that jazz.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So we'll see if, you know, Star Fox Zero doesn't end up turning out to be, here's Star Fox 2, ha ha, it came out anyway.
They should just release Star Fox 2 on the Virtual Console. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, the ROM exists. Why not?
Why not? They did it with Earthbound Beginnings. Although that game actually did come out, so it just only came out in Japan originally. Anyway.
Speaking of recent releases, are you a fan of the James Bond series, Kyle?
Oh, yes, I am. Very much
big
so.
Fan?
I quite enjoy it. I recently went through most all of the movies from the beginning to almost the beginning, I should say. Not the original Casino Royale, but I did start with Dr. No.
How many is that, like 23, 25?
It's a lot. It's a lot of movies. Some of them are almost completely forgettable, but oh well.
They do come from a different era, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Last we talked on the subject, when it came to the Daniel Craig series, you had not seen Quantum of Solace yet.
Right, I still have not.
Okay, don't bother.
It's from what I understand. That's why I'm not in any particular rush to bother watching it.
But the newest film, Spectre, came out, and it is arguably the end chapter to the Bond series, or at least for Daniel Craig's version. So just heads up going on, we're probably going to be a little spoilery. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, maybe skip ahead a tiny bit.
Yeah, we're going to delve into some spoilers. So if it bothers you, just skip ahead for a little bit.
On the other hand, you could listen and save yourself a movie ticket because I don't know if it's worth seeing in the theater.
I might have to agree with you on that, actually. I enjoyed it. But...
Right, it wasn't unwatchable.
Right.
But at the same time, I came away feeling kind of bored.
Yeah, the action scenes were well done, but I didn't really feel any tension with them.
No.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's a James Bond movie. He's not going to get majorly... There's not going to be a major blow to him, necessarily. Although, I guess Casino Royale and Skyfall, there kind of was. Now that I think about it. So they could still do it. It didn't seem like there were really any stakes.
Right. See, what drives me crazy is Casino Royale,
mm-hmm.
the Daniel Craig version,
right,
came out after the Pierce Brosnan run, which went from kind of the lighter camp to you could almost have clowns walk in and it wouldn't be any different. It got goofy.
Yeah, yeah.
So... Casino Royale was such a breath of fresh air. It still touched upon all the Bond tropes, mm-hmm. but it felt like it was its own identity. It felt like a spy thriller that was also a James Bond film.
Right.
It wasn't, here's the James Bond film, and thus it is a spy thriller. It was, here's this espionage and adventure and intrigue starring James Bond.
Yeah.
And... as you said, you know, when he's captured by Le Chiffre and he is rather brutally beaten between the legs,
uh-huh.
the reason why you laugh at the jokes in it is because it is so uncomfortable to watch. You actually feel like there's danger.
Yeah.
And he actually has to spend a few days recovering. And apparently he recovers really well because he and Vesper do all sorts of things. But, you know,
well, it's a James Bond movie.
It's a James Bond movie, but that's the thing. His relationship with Vesper feels like a relationship. You see them grow together and become an actual couple so that when she betrays him and when everything falls apart, it really hurts. You're actually upset and you understand why he's upset.
Right.
And that anger and vengeance is what drives him through most of Quantum of Solace. And it's about the only identifiable thing in the film. And it makes the last 10 minutes really satisfying. So if you want to pull up the last 10 minutes, that kind of ties up things left over from Casino Royale, and it's really cool. And he's got this really cool coat that I wish I had. I wouldn't look that good in it, but, you know, it was a really cool coat. But then you have Quantum of Solace, which feels so disjointed, so lacking in direction, and it kind of falls apart with the big twist, spoiler alert, that the bad guy isn't after oil, he's after water.
What?
That's the twist. You think that he's going after oil. And Quantum of Solace starts the slippery slope of going back into the campy Bond, where the lead bad guy has a house that's powered by pure hydrogen with big exposed generators in every other wall. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, yeah, I like to live dangerously. It's like, your house is going to explode at the very end, and we know exactly why. Then we move on to Skyfall, which I thought was far superior.
Oh, yeah. Skyfall was really good.
But it also felt it was a little loose here and there. The one part that bugged me a lot is, all right, it is a Bond movie.
Right.
And Bond gets with at least two women per movie. It's a Bond movie. What really didn't sit right with me is this version of Bond is shown to be more empathic, and the relationships with the women are more of a mutual agreement. It's not the Sean Connery, I'm going to force myself on a lesbian and make her like it.
True.
But in Skyfall, the first woman he meets up with, he manages to identify as a victim and an escapee from the sex trade.
Yeah.
She thinks he dies, and his way of saying, I'm not dead, is to sneak in on her in the shower. It's Bond. I realize it's Bond. But that...
make a good point.
If she had stepped out of said shower, and he's, you know, chilling out at the table, having just swam to the boat, and he's having his martini, he's like, this martini looks about as dry as you. You know, something stupid like that. And then they start making up. That's different. But, you know, the whole creepy, hi, you thought I'm dead, and now I'm groping you while you're sad in the I don't know. And then, you know, they both arrive on the bad guy's island, and he has the shooting contest where he puts, what, like a tumbler on her head or something? And Bond, who is so ill and beat up by this point, he can't, you know, fire straight and save her life. He misses the shot.
Yeah.
So the bad guy outright kills her, and then Bond proceeds to judo flip a dude and pinpoint accurately shoot with an Uzi and kill a bunch of dudes. And it's like, did he want her to die so she wouldn't be in the middle of the firefight? Is he just now finding his inner strength? I'm not following here.
That's a good point. Actually, I haven't really thought about Skyfall since I've seen it, actually.
But with Skyfall, it felt like it was starting to get more into, this is not a spy film, this is a Bond film, and really rely on tropes. But at the same time,
I was going to say, there was a lot of fan service in Skyfall.
It was, but I felt like it was at least incorporated somewhat organically.
But it was definitely a turn where you could kind of sense that it was sort of going in a direction where it's like, okay, this is still Bond. He wasn't completely different in Casino Royale, but you know what I mean.
That's my real problem with Spectre, is that like Skyfall, feels like here's the Bond film, here are the Bond tropes, but it feels more like a connect the dot thing and not really its own film.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say it's not fun. I mean, Bautista as Mr. Hinks, who I don't think they ever actually say his name through the course of the film.
I don't believe they do. Nope.
He is an excellent Bond villain, right up there with Oddjob and Jaws. Just a big old dude with metal-plated thumbnails who just wrecks stuff.
Yeah, who's completely unbeatable. Yeah, he was awesome. He was one of the cool parts of the movie for sure.
But then the main villain, and I guess we'll steer around what his main motivation is, it's just when they make his big reveal, when they tie it all together to why he hates Bond and how he has been a force throughout the entire quadrilogy, my reaction wasn't, oh, snap. It was, oh, okay.
Yeah, like he was behind all of the events of the previous films.
I mean, Spectre was supposed to be the anti-MI6. This was Cobra to G.I. Joe. This was Mad against Inspector Gadget. This is supposed to be the big shadow organization. And all we really get from them is a board meeting.
Yeah, and that they're a counter-spy agency, as in they're, like, looking to take over practically everything digitally, rather than having actual spies out in the field. Having anyone out in the field, they'll just, you know, spy on everybody through their digital devices and whatever, which is a good way of sort of tying it in with a more modern sensibility of the stuff we're experiencing Absolutely. Now, but it still did seem kind of contrived and didn't really work.
I mean, it felt like if you're going to have a mundane world conquest scheme, which doesn't feel fair because being able to monitor all the world's intelligence at once is a pretty scary prospect.
Right.
But it's not the moon laser. You know, it's not the GoldenEye satellite. It's not the big, scary thing that you can have Bond blow up. So you need something a little more visceral to work with.
Yeah.
And that's why Mr. Hinks was so cool, because he was that big thing to combat. It's just he's removed from the movie, and then you get to the big plot. So when the big bad, the true threat of the movie, is taken care of by Q in a laptop in the background, it feels like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to, I don't know if they're trying to anticipate, like, oh, why doesn't Bond just have Q hack in and disable everything? It's like if they're trying to anticipate sort of like that modern sensibility, like back in the day, like cell phones didn't exist, so you couldn't just go make a phone call from anywhere. You had to find a payphone or find some sort of way to contact somebody. But now they're just kind of maybe either relying too much on technology or just thinking about technology too hard.
Right.
If you understand what I mean.
Yeah. Now, something I did like, speaking of Q, was, for one thing, more Q, and more Q is never a bad thing.
Right.
And two, the fact that Q and Moneypenny and M all got to do more. You know, they weren't just intro cast. They were active members of the plot. And I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, they all got to do things. They all had their own agency, their own goals, even if their goal was to just help Bond throughout most of the movie. One scene that was really cool for me was when Moneypenny was at home during the car chase while Bond's trying to call her. And it shows her just going about her normal life, pretty much. Because it shows Moneypenny has a life outside of just being the receptionist and secretary at MI6, which
it's
is something
having a life, Bond. You should try it.
Yeah, which is something they had never really shown of her specifically at all.
Right.
So it's kind of nice to see stuff like that.
Now, as for the primary Bond girl of the film, Dr. Swan, I am somewhat divided. On the one hand, I appreciate the fact that they establish why she knows how to use a gun, why she understands this world of cloak and dagger, and that when the big fight happens on the train, she isn't completely sidelined, you know?
Yeah,
she goes down with one hit, but this is Mr. Hinks. He's shown to be ludicrously strong. And Bond has been shown to have the mutant power to recover instantly from concussions. So that she still came back and joined in on the fight. I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
What I didn't really buy was the romance between her and Bond. The most I got out of it was almost a kind of mentor or big brother kind of relationship, where he was looking out for her and trying to protect her, both physically and emotionally, but didn't really get the whole... It seemed like they were trying to build a parallel with how he built up his relationship with Vesper in the first film.
Yeah. Looking back on most of the Bond women in the entire series, most of them really don't really have that arc with him. It's just like, oh, you're James Bond, I love you. Pretty right. much. There are a few exceptions, but most of them are just kind of like, it may take some of them a little while to warm up to him, but not very long.
So, right. Especially the first moment of the film, but...
Right.
That's why I enjoyed Vesper so much, is that they had that complete arc.
Yeah.
And that's why I can't remember the character or the actress's name, which is sad, but the primary female lead in Quantum of Solace, I greatly enjoyed the fact that she and Bond don't hook up.
Really?
They have a kind of passionate goodbye kiss at the very end, but she has her mission. The two of them link up for said mission, and that's it.
Huh.
There is an actual leading lady that Bond doesn't boink, and I really appreciated that.
Wow. That. Interesting.
So with Swan, she wasn't problematic.
She wasn't
tiresome or... I didn't mind her. Her accent seemed to disappear after her introduction, but, you know, she wasn't a bad character. It's just I didn't feel like she and Bond earned the relationship that the ending hinged on so desperately.
Yeah. The way she just, when she walked away toward the end, I was just like, all right, see ya. it was a point where you're supposed to feel kind of bad or feel kind of like, oh no, how could she? She's just walking away from this, but it's like, all right, whatever.
I It's like, all right, that makes enough sense why they're writing her out of the movie now. You served your purpose.
Yeah.
Here's your paycheck. Thanks for coming.
You're done. Now we can on the I know thing. This. Oh. I know this is a Bond movie, so she'll be back either through being kidnapped or just by coming back. But even then, I was still just like, all right, see you.
So let's do a quick ranking of the four films, even though you haven't seen the one, but you know enough. I got to say, top favorite Daniel Craig Bond is Casino Royale.
Oh, yeah.
No contest. Number two, beloved for a number of reasons, is Skyfall. Number three, worth renting once it comes out on, you know, Netflix or whatever, Spectre. And just because I'm a completionist, you might as well watch Quantum of Solace at some point at number four.
You have my exact order. If I watch Quantum of Solace and like it, I might change my order. But as far as it stands now, what's that?
And also, another big, big, big thing for me when it comes to Bond movies is the intro ballad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the theme song is very important. I will agree.
Now, I Know Your Name from Casino Royale is one of my favorite songs, period.
That's an excellent song. Yes.
I will find an excuse to drive somewhere just to blare that on the radio and have it on loop.
Mm-hmm.
Adele's Skyfall. Really dig that track.
Mm-hmm.
Love it a lot. Writing's on the Wall for Spectre. Not bad. Kind of slow. The falsetto was a little off-putting, but yeah, not bad.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even tell you what Quantum of Solace was other than I was really tempted to step out of the theater until it was done. I really didn't like it. It was like, oh, wow, I hope the rest of the movie makes up for this.
Uh-oh.
And then it did.
Friggin' You Know My Name is an excellent Bond theme. I still really like I still really like GoldenEye, though. I still really like GoldenEye. Come on.
Can't remember the GoldenEye theme.
Oh, man. It's very similar to the Goldfinger theme.
Well, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Who is it? Tina Turner who did GoldenEye? I think so.
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a fun song. I think a lot of the theme songs at least, I do enjoy the theme songs for most of the Pierce Brosnan era. If there's anything to enjoy about some of the later Pierce Brosnan movies, the theme songs are kind of fun.
Now, here's the thing. I feel like I have forgotten most of the Pierce Brosnan era.
Yeah, yeah. You're not missing too much for the latter half of it, for sure. I actually like Tomorrow Never Dies for its just ridiculous, over-the-top silliness. It's fun. It's a fun movie in that way. It's cheesy, but it's fun. It's about a cable tycoon, I think, but so it's really kind of stupid.
Right. He's the one who wants to start World War III so that he can sell the most papers, right?
Yeah, I think that was it. Yeah. It was dumb. It was really dumb, but I don't know. I thought it was fun. Plus, I really do like Pierce Brosnan as James Bond. He got the short end of the stick as far as, like, movie writing. Like, his movies were not written well at all. They were not plotted well in any way, shape, or form. But I thought he made a really good James Bond. Just in terms of, like, his appearance and his demeanor, really.
Now, I do remember I saw GoldenEye again after a while. It didn't hold up quite as well as I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
But then they got to the fight with Sean Bean in the big satellite dish. I'm like, oh, wow, this is a whole lot more violent than I remembered. Very visceral.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. Almost,
that was one of the things I liked about Casino Royale is the fighting wasn't truly glorified. It was Daniel Craig beating people to death. And it's like, oh, this spy thing is not necessarily so glamorous. It's kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
And the Pierce Brosnan and Sean Bean fight was kind of right up that alley. It didn't look like here is the Bond fight with the villain, ho, ho, ho. It was, holy crap, they're going for blood. Jeez.
Yeah, they still kept some of the darkness of, like, the late 80s Bond movies with, I can never remember his name. The one after Roger Moore. He was only in two movies.
Okay, that's why I can't remember him.
I can't remember his name. This is going to bother me. I'm going to look it up, and that's going to be Timothy Dalton. That's it.
Okay. He only did two?
I think so. Maybe it was three. I thought he was a really good Bond, too, actually. He got a little bit dark. He was a little bit of that darker Bond before Daniel Craig. He was kind of similar to Daniel Craig, actually, in a lot of ways. I thought his movies were pretty good.
Which ones were his?
Let me see. Living Daylights and License to Kill.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really? Only those two?
Only those two in 1987 and 1989.
And then there wasn't anything until Brosnan's appearance in GoldenEye, correct?
Right. And then 6 years later in 1995.
Wow.
Yeah. Up until that point, there'd been a James Bond movie at least like once every 2, maybe 3 years. Yeah, there was a little bit of a gap there for 3 years, but it looks like every 2 years, all the way up to 1989, when they put the series on hold for 6 years and then bought it back with GoldenEye.
And then there was GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies.
World Is Not Enough, and Die Another Day.
World Was Not Enough. That was the one with the guy who couldn't feel pain trying to nuke the Vatican, right?
I have no idea why I'm laughing at that. Probably because it sounds ridiculous. But it probably was. I know it's the one with Sophie Marceau and Denise Richards.
And then Die Another Day, that had the dude with the ice palace, right?
Die Another Day, yeah. Die Another Day was the one with the invisible car in the ice palace, yeah.
What was his big plan again? I don't even remember.
Ice cubes? He was making his own Fortress of Solitude, and Bond just had to show up and ruin it.
I really don't remember that one at all.
Yeah, you're not missing too much. It had Halle Berry dressed as the first Bond girl, but as Ursula Andress.
I see. And then we move on to Casino Royale, where it's
the reboot, quote-unquote.
It almost comes down to just money, but, you know, capturing Le Chiffre and getting information on the terrorist cell, which plants the first seeds of Spectre.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more of an origin story for Bond than a necessary, we have to fight the evil guy before he, I don't know, brainwashes all the monkeys and causes uprisings in zoos or whatever.
Right, it's kind of a reboot.
Quantum of Solace is, again, kind of international intrigue with the bad guy who is a part of Spectre trying to take over smaller nations and get access to their water so that he can bill them ridiculous amounts of money. Wow. Skyfall is almost kind of civil war with an MI6 and the rogue agent who was supposed to have died.
Yeah, and then Spectre is, of course, the grand return of Spectre. Although, the allegedly grand return of Spectre.
So I guess when you get down to it, the Daniel Craig series really has been rather low-key in terms of here's the villain's big master plot.
Yeah, the villains have been probably the weakest part of the Daniel Craig series, which is unfortunate because usually Bond villains are like ridiculous, silly. That's kind of the whole point.
Now, I did think that the villains for Spectre, number one, Mr. Hanks is awesome. Mr. Hanks is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
The big bad of the movie, who they gave him two different names, and I don't remember either one of them because they rattled them off very quickly, muttering as part of the conversation.
I don't remember his, like, real name, but the name he took is Ernst Stavro Blofeld.
Yeah, it doesn't really roll off your tongue like Goldfinger or Dr. No.
Well, he's the Bond villain. He's Spectre. Blofeld is the guy who, in the old early movies, was sort of the guy who was in the shadows for a long time before they finally revealed him during the Sean Connery era, the tail end of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's the guy Dr. Evil's based on from the Austin Powers movies.
Oh.
Yeah. Spectre is the old anti-MI6 from the earlier movies and consequently the books that they're finally able to bring him back for Spectre specifically because I guess the name Spectre was tied up with something about copyright or some sort of rights issues where they couldn't use it until now.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know the exact details, but that's what I've kind of heard, is like they weren't able to actually bring back Spectre until now. But Spectre was sort of the staple of the original Sean Connery James Bond movies.
And Blofeld was an actual character during that era.
Yeah, Blofeld showed up several times sort of in the shadows.
Okay.
He was either turned around and like you could only see the top of his head with a chair. It was basically like Dr. Claw. But Dr. Claw, also nice. Another inspiration. Another inspired by Blofeld, pretty clearly. So that's why the cat inspector, actually, both me and my girlfriend Jennifer, we both laughed when we saw the cat in Inspectors. We're like, yep, he's got a cat. Of course he does. Yep, he's freaking Blofeld. Of course he has a cat.
He did a good job of being at least a charismatic villain, even if his reveal and his presence were somewhat lacking.
Mm. I really didn't care for the fact that they made him like Bond's adopted brother.
No, that was what I was trying to dance around. Oh, well, we wanted people to spoil.
Yeah, well, we told people we were going into spoiler territory, but
I didn't mind the connection. It's just it felt like they laid out the clues for you to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
But then I guess they assumed that you figured it out, and then they just kind of rolled with it, so there was no big reveal.
Yeah, but even if there was, like, a big reveal, I'd have been like, I would have had a reaction where I would have been like, seriously? That's, why does the villain always have to be so directly connected to the hero? I mean, I get that I don't have a problem with that plot specifically, but it seems really weird to do that with Bond and Blofeld. I don't know, had never been established before like that.
And it didn't really add anything necessarily to the film because they don't interact in any way.
Right.
Like, they know each other. It didn't really impact their interactions at all, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't really necessary at all. I will agree with that.
Well, while we're sitting here busy questioning directors and writers, other people out there on the interwebs have been questioning me.
Uh-oh.
Do you have a handful of those questions for me, Kyle?
Oh, yes, I do, and they're tough questions, man. These are no softballs.
Uh-oh.
No softballs here. We're not here to butter you up. This is the Q&A segment, folks, where your questions come to me, and then I ask them to Ian. Your questions out there, mostly related to the Sonic the Hedgehog and Mega Man comics that Ian is the main writer of. Mega Man is unfortunately starting to, is actually winding down next month. But if you still have questions, I'm sure Ian has something in the form of an answer for you.
Directly or indirectly.
Right. So, Dudest of Guys asks, what's your favorite comic character design? He means of the designs, the original designs that have shown up in the comic of the characters.
I was going to say, there's a lot of comics out there with a lot of designs in them.
I'm sorry, but, I should have... Yeah, I got the whole thing. Which design turned out the most satisfying and which was the farthest from what you originally envisioned? So, characters you've worked on specifically.
Well, that's a loaded question.
Told you, no softballs here.
I don't know, because here's the thing. When it comes to character redesigns or new character designs, more often than not, I dabble in them at the very early stage. I can doodle well enough to get the idea across half the time, but it really, 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 really needs to be filtered through someone who knows what they're doing. With the original, with the core Freedom Fighters, they went through numerous redesigns and different takes and lots of back and forth. Every one of them had at least one element where somebody, each of us dug our heels in and were arguing over. I know one that was a bit of a bone of contention was Rotor. I know some fans are upset that he's no longer, you know, the pudgy roly-poly guy.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things I brought up, is that, you know, you don't really have a lot of fat heroes, and, you know, Rotor's kind of known for being a big guy.
Yeah.
And we finally met in the middle with his current design, in that he's still a big guy. I mean, yeah, he's buff, but it isn't in the kind of rippling muscles buff. He's just a big dude. He's thick all over, so... Yeah, it's not quite the same rotundness as the old design, but it still has that bigger fellow feel. It isn't a complete betrayal of the original character.
Yeah.
Sally was probably the biggest one we went over, because she was going to be the one that got the most focus. She's arguably the single most popular and recognized comic character out there. So there was a lot of back and forth on how to present her, especially since the main direction was to kind of free her of a lot of the baggage of the older stories and make her somewhat more sporty and lively so that it made sense that she was with Sonic. Right. Someone who could keep up. And me, a lot of what I wanted to put forward in these designs, or at least my thinking that I put out there, was that these characters should look like they belong in the games. These are somebody that you could easily see as playable in some fashion.
Yeah.
So that was the main thought behind that. I'm really happy with how the aquatic Mobians came out overall, because we really hadn't seen any of that type of animal given the Sonic treatment. And a large part of that, you know, belongs to Aaliyah Baker, who did the initial concepts for Razor, Coral, Pearly, Queen, Angelica. About the only one that I designed that didn't get changed too much was King Puff, and that's not really all that different because he's circles. the mysterious fishy character who's been popping up in cameos so far, that was Aaliyah's design. So all of those came together really well. It's something of a hot-button topic among fans, but I really like how Dulcie came out. We were able to take something that really did not fit with Sonic at all in terms of design. And we kept the general principle behind her. We kept the size. We kept the power. But now she looks like she would fit in with the cast, with the game cast. She looks like she could be a actual Sonic character and not a disproportionately bloated bottom kangaroo dragon thing.
She looks awesome. I really like her design.
That, and there's a lot more in her design that's harkening back to the old design that people give it credit for. Like,
right.
The gold bands on the design are nods to the gold ring in her nose. The black outline that frames her top is supposed to be a nod to the weird flight harness she wore before. She had, the original Dulcie design had these little feather wings on her ankles for some reason. There's a wing motif on her boots to be a nod back to that. All of the elements that the new design has are in some way a nod to what she had before. So it's respecting the source material, but making it look like an actual Sonic character. And that's the point. It's the Sonic book. For a long time, it was Sonic the Hedgehog with all this other stuff that, you know, it was its own world, but it didn't necessarily mesh with what was Sonic. And at the time, there was room for that because there wasn't really a defined Sonic world.
Yeah.
We're talking about the period between, you know, Sonic 3 and Knuckles and Sonic Adventure, that nebulous period where you had Knuckles Chaotix and, you know, 3D Blast, which really didn't flesh out the world all that much.
Yeah, right.
Once the 3D generation began, though, we were given the world. You had to start conforming to it because that's what the world is. And that's one of the beautiful things of the reboot, is that we can take some of the more popular elements from ZAM, take what was good and what worked with them, run them through the game filter, and now they fit. Now they can have a second chance at life, because the only reason why they were out there in the first place is because they were attached to Sonic. Now, instead of being these hanging on elements, they are supportive elements, so that hopefully they all gel together into one vision.
That makes sense.
Now, the answer of which one is my favorite, I don't know.
what character have you enjoyed writing, maybe not the most, but like recently you enjoyed just writing a lot?
It's really hard to pick, but I've grown to really enjoy writing Sonic. He was honestly the first one I was the most concerned with, the one that took me the most time and effort to plot out correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But as I described this on another podcast I did a while ago, when you, let's say you're driving down the road, somebody cuts you off, and it isn't until like an hour later you think of the perfect curse or comeback line you could have yelled at him. Sonic is that, but always on time. He always has the one-liner. He always knows what to say. He always has the cool quip. He can always roll with it. And it's not that he's mean-spirited or spiteful. It's just he's quick-witted, and he's fun, and he can roll with any element you throw at him.
Mm-hmm.
And once I kind of wrap my head around that aspect of him, that he's just always going to have the cool answer, everything kind of clicked. He's a nice guy who will still call you an idiot to your face, but he doesn't mean it in a mean way. He is always going to be just the smoothest one out there. And that's a lot of fun to write, especially when you pit him against Eggman, who's always delightful to write.
Okay. Eggman's always a treat.
Well, I just try to imagine, you know, how would Mike Pollock read this line? How would he really sell this? And it's like, okay, perfect. There we go. Boom.
There is no other voice I hear for Eggman either. There's nothing. It's just brilliant.
So those two have been a lot of fun to write. Always enjoy a chance to write the Chaotix. It's been fun finding, or I guess reestablishing, Knuckles' voice. after all is said and done. Getting the game version that's there and fleshing it out so that it's a little more than just the arrogant rival, give him a little more meat.
Yeah.
And his aloofness, especially when you pair it up with Relic's giddiness and motor mouth.
I love Relic. She's great.
She's hemmed together very nicely. Actually, there was a thread a while ago on the Bumble King forums saying, you know, what voices do you envision for the comic cast?
Oh, yeah, we talked about that on the show, actually, too.
Yeah, yeah, I'd forgotten to bring this up. Did you ever see Disney's Tarzan?
Did I? Actually, I don't think I have seen it in full, no.
Do when you get a chance. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But the voice actress, the way she does Jane, is pretty much the voice I'm using for Relic whenever I'm writing her.
Okay. I do not know who that is, full but I'll bubbly, have to, I'll full go back.
Sunshine, can't settle on a single thought, British.
British accent. Yeah. I definitely hear Relic with a British accent. I think you conveyed that pretty well with your writing, but I guess I'll check that out. All right, next question. Oh, Shade Ketchum asks, solicits for a future issue mentioned that Shamar has its own Freedom Fighters. Can you give us a general idea of how many Freedom Fighter groups there are?
To be clear, there's only one Freedom Fighter group.
Okay.
The official Freedom Fighters, that's Sally, Rotor, Bunny, Antoine, with Sonic, Tails, Amy, Big, and Cream. That and Nicole. That's the Freedom Fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other pockets of do-gooders that are inspired by them.
Of Resistance.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The Desert Raiders, the Shamar team, which debuts in Song of the Hedgehog number 282, which should be out the week this podcast goes live, are just one of those groups. We've already seen Lupe and the Wolfpack, which I hope to get back to and flesh out a bit when time allows. After we see Vince and Shamar, we're going to Chunnan and seeing Dulcie's group. Don't want to get into that too much just yet because I don't want to spoil. Mordred Hood implied that Bo Sparrow and his team is still around, so that's four. Mighty and Moss and Ray are not really an organized unit, but there's room for them to expand, kind of. So we'll say that's five, and that's definitely enough to start with for now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other continents, there's other egg bosses to combat, and there's other heroes I have in mind. But for now, we're going to say there's roughly five groups. And then otherwise, global peacekeeping is mostly handled by Gunn.
Now, this question is about Raiders of the Abyss, which unfortunately you've recently kind of put aside. But I thought I'd ask it anyway, because I just wanted to see what your answer is. Justin Green, at Anime Cowboy on Twitter, asks, obviously way down the line and resource dependent, would you consider doing a graphic novel of Raiders of the Abyss?
Had the project taken off, sure. It would have been rather daunting since Raiders of the Abyss was structured as a choose-your-own-adventure thing. And just sitting down and plotting out a graphic novel with a linear storyline is hard enough. I don't know if I would have gone that route. If it had been successful, I might have looked into having some illustration here and there for key scenes. But that's all kind of pie in the sky at this point. Those who are still waiting on their chapters, who have been infinitely patient and wonderfully generous, all 15 of you, I greatly appreciate all the support you put behind it. I will be completing the second chapter and the bonus material as promised. But after the minor surgery I went through, I'm kind of behind on deadlines. And I'm going to be traveling for Thanksgiving. So not sure how much time I'm going to have, but I will. It's really my objective to get it done before the end of the year so that all of their faith in me is at least rewarded and that I can finally just, you know, no pun intended, put the final chapter on it and be done.
All right. Matt Doyle asks, at Matt Doyle Media, I should say, he asks, how far in advance are Sonic comics scripted and how often do the scripts change prior to publication?
This one I get a lot. There's an FAQ on BumbleKing.com that really covers the process of creating the books. But typically, optimally, scripts are usually written about 6 months in advance of anything that's being published right now. And on top of that, I usually have the next year roughly plotted out. So I've got a rough idea of what's going to happen in the 2016 block. This can change. This can change a lot because you never know when the licensor is going to come in and say, hey, we want you to do this. Case in point, I had this one particular arc in mind for next year, and then weighing it against what it was going to accomplish and where it fell concerning other material, it's like, you know what, it'd be better just to move that somewhere else. So fired that off to the editor, said, here, I think we should revise this in mind. He's like, yep, that's a good idea. So, you know, it always in motion is the future, as dear Master Yoda said. In terms of how much it changes from approval to rough draft to final draft, usually not a whole lot. 9 times out of 10, whatever gets approved at the first stage gets tinkered with a little bit as it goes to script, because maybe something that I had plotted out for 2 pages really needs 3, or could be shortened to 1, or reorganized slightly. And then, you know, the rough draft gets tweaked further and some adjustments. But the core ideas, the basic stuff, largely doesn't change. It's really a oddball situation where we have to go in and just like cut out huge swaths of content and rewrite.
All right. Let's see. Last question here from Meladin. Anything potentially lined up for Heavy and Bomb between now and STH 300 or SU 100 if things go to your plans?
Beyond a cameo, not especially. They kind of seem to be cursed because every time I try to do something with them, they would get blown up or destroyed somehow.
Well, go figure. You have a character named Bomb.
Well, I mean, that is kind of his thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. They are such minor characters, and arguably not even characters, but more of a handicap you get saddled with if you do things wrong. I don't know if I'm going to go full on make them supporting cast, but I do know where I think they are and what they're doing right now. So I do want to at least give them a nod. I mean, I'm a gigantic Sonic nerd. I want to acknowledge as much stuff as possible.
Right.
They're not going to get any major spotlight, even if I do get my way 100%, but I do want to at least establish what has happened to them since Chaotix.
All right. They were always kind of weird inclusion to me to begin with, even back in Chaotix itself. It's like, all right, I guess that's kind of cool, but you have Badniks running around with you. But
yeah. Well, it's funny because the manual itself says, you know, they said they betrayed Eggman and are there to help you, but even the manual casts it into suspicion. It's like, are they there to help or are they really there to hinder?
Right.
It's like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
That's kind of dark. You can maybe hinge something off of that. And I think the comic kind of did that for a little while, didn't it? I think.
They were there, and then they were part of the Secret Service, and then they were controlled by nanites, and then they got blown up a lot, and then they got blown up some more. They got blown up another time, and then before I could get back to them, they were done.
We have a question for me this week. This is a bonus. Yes, this is a bonus question.
Surprise! Are you ready, Kyle?
My body may be ready. I'm not sure. I have to check.
Like I said, you're a man of mysteries.
Let me check. I'm as ready as I'm going to get, so go for it.
All right, then. Arthur Led at the Mirror Knight from Twitter says, Kyle, I'm recently listening to past Game Fuels and Nitro Game Injections. Who are the picture girls from both shows?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for going back and listening to those. I really appreciate it. I hope you're enjoying the show. And those are characters that I came up with many years ago. They're my own original characters, so do not steal them. Just kidding. Actually, if you want to steal them, I'd actually kind of be flattered. But anyway, they are original characters I came up with back in like 2005, along with, fun fact, with Aaliyah Baker. She was my designer on those. So she's been designing characters for a long time. I bet you guys didn't know that.
Yeah, she's been more or less the unsung art team for nigh upon a decade.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So for Nitro Game Injection, we have Ariane, who was... both of these characters were actually originally created as Reploids in the Mega Man X universe. I've kind of gotten away from that in recent years, but I still like the characters, so I still use them in a lot of things, but they're not necessarily Reploid designs anymore. So, and the other one is Maxine or Max for Game Fuel. So there might be a little bit more coming out about those characters soon, actually. Me and Ian are, there's a thing going on that may or may not, I don't know if it will become known or not, but yes, thank you guys. If you're out there listening to my shows, I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. Hope you guys are enjoying the music.
And hey, you got a question before we got to Bumblecast number 5.
Wow.
Diggity.
Wow. Yes, a question specifically for me. I'm really happy about that. Thank you.
Ask Kyle more questions. It makes him feel all warm and snuggly inside.
All right. I think that's going to do it for this edition of the Bumblecast. The fourth edition. Fourth episode.
Before we close it out, let's do the last minute pitches and whatnot. As always, you can find my body of work, newest releases, FAQs, and all that jazz at bumbleking.com. That's Bumble like the bee, King like the monarch. If you have any questions for me or Kyle, you can always pose them on the Bumble King forums or on Twitter, hashtag BumbleCast, to either Ian Flynn BKC or Kyle JCRB, or ask in the comment section below.
Yes, if you're listening on YouTube. Although if you're listening over at kngi.org, there's also a comment section there, so feel free to use that. And you can find my stuff, more of my shows. I do other podcasts and radio shows over at kngi.org. If you're into video game music, especially focusing on remixes and rearrangements of video game music, you'll definitely want to go check those shows out. I'm right in the middle of Nintendo November right now, and this Saturday, so actually tomorrow, because we're recording this on Friday, will be F-Zero, which should be out, will be releasing in podcast form on Monday. So doing a whole show dedicated to the music of F-Zero. And then after that, I'm not sure. I don't know what's coming up next week, which will be this week when this releases. Man, time is weird. this is a confusing segment to talk about. Anyway, Nintendo November on Game Fuel. Go check it out. KNGI.org. And of course, be sure to go check out all the other great shows over there, including this one.
And to make it even more confusing, even though we do Bumblecast every 2 weeks, I'm going to be traveling for the holidays. So next Bumblecast is due on November 30th. It might be a little later than that, but we will shoot for the week of the 30th. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll work it out for sure.
You can always keep up with the latest Bumblecast news by following at Ian Flynn BKC or at Kyle JCRB on Twitter or on BumbleKing.com or on KNGI.org.
Yep, your source. For all things Bumblecast.
And some stuff that isn't Bumblecast, but, you know, we try to diversify a little bit.
Of course.
Is that all for you, sir?
That'll do it for this edition of the Bumblecast.
Thank you for joining us, and we will see you, hopefully, in 2 weeks, if not a few more days after that.
Bye! Thank you for listening to the Bumblecast. Please subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review on iTunes. Find more episodes at bumbleking.com and kngi.org. Bumblecast is copyright Bumbleking Comics. Original music composed by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more music from Coda at bc.s3m.us. Pay what you want for the intro theme, as part of the compilation album Noise Chan and Nugget, Adventures in Chiptune, at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com.